Tom Woods Show, episode 2028.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by irrational, panicked people who think you're a terrible person because you don't want to lock everybody in their houses. No amount of reasoning appears to accomplish anything. And not to mention the media has done nothing but stoke fear and fail to provide context. Well, one of the many benefits you get as a supporter of the Tom Woods Show is membership inside the Tom Woods Show Elite. Recently migrated off Facebook, so if that was holding you back, no longer. This group will keep you sane and informed, and as an added bonus, it won't accuse you of wanting to kill your grandmother. Join me in there at supportinglisteners.com. Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Carol Markowitz is with me. She's a New York Post columnist who has written all over the place and been all over TV and radio. And I saw on Twitter that she and her family have decided to leave New York. And I, having heard what she had to say about it and knowing what it's like to love a place and realize that you just can't live there, it's devastating. And I want to talk about what's happened to New York, because even if you don't live in New York or you don't like New York or whatever, this is part of the United States, and maybe it's a harbinger of things to come elsewhere. We'll have to talk about that, but that seemed like a more than reasonable topic for the Tom Woods Show. So, Carol, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I saw you on Twitter. I saw you. What program were you on where you revealed that that's it, you've had it up to here, you're leaving New York?
I revealed it on Megyn Kelly's
podcast. Megyn Kelly, that's right. And then there were a number. I actually sent this out in my email newsletter, by the way. I told people about your situation and the commentary from so many people, because so many people were saying, if Carol leaves New York City, then you know things have gotten bad. Because like me, you've been a cheerleader for the city for some time. I don't live there, but I used to.
Right.
And when I did live there, I was in graduate school. I was too dumb to think to go to a Broadway show or whatever. But ever since then, I would go there 5-6 times a year, even.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even care. I would stay in Times Square, the most touristy part, because, okay, it's not the best restaurants there, but the theater is there and there's the hustle and bustle.
Right.
And so the idea that this is closed off to me has been so devastating and heartbreaking to me.
Yeah.
And so as somebody who's lived there longer than I did, how long have you lived there?
So I was born in the Soviet Union, but I moved to Brooklyn when I was a little under 2. So my entire adult life, you know, with some interruptions, I have lived in New York. And I'm married to somebody who has a very similar story to me. He was born in Israel and he came to the U.S. when he was 5 and had lived in Queens his whole life. So we are both lifelong New Yorkers, and we were sure we were going to be raising lifelong New Yorkers, because why wouldn't we? This is the greatest city in the history of the world. It's not even close. And obviously our lives would stay here. So it's been an adjustment thinking about ourselves as non-New Yorkers and that we're going to leave and not come back.
It's just terrible. Just terrible. And it's not as devastating for me, because of course I moved out of there a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I moved out of there after grad school. I went to Long Island. But then even from Long Island, I would get on the Long Island Railroad and
right.
I'd be in the city, no trouble at all. And yeah. just little things like at 2 a.m., you could get in a cab and, you know, go somewhere and something would be going on. There'd be some bustle somewhere. And the thing is, we run into, I'm sure when you said what you said, you got some reaction along these lines that from people who, many of whom have never been to the city, or others who just don't like cities, period, who are lecturing you, oh, it's always been terrible, and you know,
right.
what are you doing there in the first place? And
yeah.
I don't know, I just can't connect with these people.
Yeah, so actually I've gotten it from both sides, where, you know, people sort of on the right will say, like, finally, like, you woke up and realized that, you know, this is a terrible place to live, and especially I have 3 kids, it's a terrible place to raise children. And then, you know, people on the left are like, they almost don't believe that the reasons that I'm giving for leaving are my reasons for leaving. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, you just like Florida's weather or the low taxes or whatever. Or, you know, I have had some people say to me that, like, you just don't want to live around liberals. Like, first of all, I lived here my whole life. I live
yeah.
in the center epicenter of leftism. I live in Park Slope, Brooklyn, which is like, you could not get more left than where I live. It wasn't like I woke up one day and was like, wait a minute, there are no conservatives here or libertarians. That's not what happened. And it wasn't like Florida suddenly developed good weather or they just got, you know, no state income tax. This is all been going on for a while. It was literally I hit the wall on living in this crazy place in this crazy time because of COVID restrictions, period.
And in fact, when people tell me about the weather in Florida, I live in central Florida. I suppose if you live somewhat more north, the temperatures can get a bit milder, certainly in the winter months, but it's really hot here.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortably, unlivably hot for a solid 6 months. So I actually would prefer the weather in New York. I like the four seasons. And yeah, it gets hot, it gets cold, but I'm not a baby. I can deal with the cold. That's perfectly fine. I would rather have that, honestly, than 6 months where you almost can't venture out. So that's not what drew me. I mean, by the way, I moved to Florida 5 years ago. I wouldn't say at random, but it's not like I knew what was going to happen.
Right.
It's just, thank goodness I had the good fortune of having happened to move here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've got five kids and I want them to have as normal a life as they can.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. You could just, you know, you should take the credit and say that you were an early adopter.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. Now, even though I still feel like a newbie from, you know, being here for only 5 years, with all this huge influx of people, now I feel it's kind of like I'm an old pro now. I can tell them all the different parts and, you know, where I would move if I had to do it over again and stuff like that. You know, obviously, I understand that some of this is private. So if you don't want to disclose anything, yeah, you don't have to. But have you settled on a part of the state that you want to come to?
So it's going to be Southeast. Our sort of considerations were we want to be near the ocean. My husband needs a major airport, which is sort of disqualifies a lot of places that we would otherwise consider. And we're Jewish and we wanted a Jewish community. So it's Southeast sort of made sense to us. And so I get a lot of like, you realize you're moving to the blue part of a red state, but it actually is trending red. And it's not even about the politics for me. It's about that the people are so much saner than the people here. So last year, when schools were completely closed in New York, our family did sort of a test run where we lived in Palm Beach Gardens in Palm Beach County for almost 5 months. And our kids went to school there and we just lived such a normal, amazing 2019 life there at the height of insanity here, where restaurants were closed. I mean, schools were closed. Sitting at a bar was impossible. And it didn't seem like it was really going to turn around that quickly. And it really didn't. It would be, you know, basically when we came back from that stay is when New York finally started to head into the direction of normalcy that Florida had been in all along. And so what we found during that time, it wasn't like about just politicians or about politics or about, you know, being on the right or being on the left. It was winter 2020 and nobody in Florida wore a mask outside. Nobody, not, you know, I met like very left people, but they were like, obviously we don't wear masks outside. That's crazy. But that's something that goes on in New York City to this moment. There are people walking around masked right now outdoors in New York City, probably with, you know, the booster shot already. And I just don't see the movement towards sanity in my fellow New Yorkers at all. If I saw that, it wouldn't matter Democrat, Republican, you know, right, left, red, blue, I might stay. If I saw some fight, I might stay, but I don't see that at all.
I remember being somewhat encouraged when Cuomo said, all right, we've hit the magic number of 70% of people vaccinated. So mm-hmm. now we can fully open up. And I remember thinking, if that's the fig leaf they need, I'll give it to them. If that's what it's going to take to get people to act like human beings again, that's fine with me. Little did I know that the vaccine number, far from in fact being a point of liberation for New York, even after this celebration of now we can reopen, that it would turn into this vehicle of unbelievable cruelty toward a massive number of people.
Yeah. And the thing is, what really kills me about it is even if you're, let's say you believe in the vaccine mandate, you think it was a good idea. The evidence is in that it hasn't done anything for our case numbers or our death numbers or anything. It has had no positive effect on COVID rates in New York at all. And even if you believed in Bill de Blasio in October pushing vaccine mandates, it's now, you know, we're heading into end of December and the evidence should be in by now that it did something, but it didn't do anything. And people still refuse to believe that they've made a mistake. So we're leaving in a few weeks and my three kids are not vaccinated and we can no longer go to restaurants. Like my small children who are not at risk at all cannot be indoors at museums or restaurants or shows or anything because they don't have vaccine evidence. And it's just so insane to me that New Yorkers aren't fighting back on this because not that many kids are vaccinated. At the last time I checked, it was like 21%, which is actually pretty high for, again, kids who are not at risk whatsoever for poor COVID outcomes. But that 21%, you know, where are the 79% say we're not going to stand for this? Where are they?
Yeah, that's the thing. I figured, and I think this will be true for most parts of the country that try it, that if you go into this, okay, we're not going to force your 5 to 11-year-olds to be vaccinated, but they can't do anything if they're not, that would be, now they're reaching a little bit too far because mm-hmm. there are plenty of parents who believe in the vaccination, but who, you know, they can read. They know, they have a sense of the cost-benefit being extremely skewed in the case of kids, or at least somewhat skewed. Mm-hmm. So why would we do this? And so that would lead to a backlash in almost every place. Now, as you say, it should also lead to one in New York, given the current numbers. It could be that it just hasn't hit people yet. I don't know. Once it actually goes into effect, I don't know.
This is really the thing. It's that I've lost faith in my fellow New Yorkers. I always saw them as so sharp and so just able to see the angles and really brave. And I just, all these things that I always associated with a New Yorker personality. And even though, you know, the majority didn't share my politics, it didn't matter because they were like cool and smart and fierce. That is what's so wild to me in this moment is that they're so meek and tamed and afraid. It's not the New Yorkers I knew at all. I have so much trouble getting people to speak to me on the record about COVID restrictions. They don't want to have their lives destroyed. And this was true even last year when schools were open. I couldn't get parents to say to me, I think schools should be open the way they are in countries all over the world and in states, you know, all over America. They wouldn't even say that because they didn't want somebody calling their work. Or these are concerns that people have. And I completely understand and I get it, but it's like, it's your kid. That's it. You know, you have to stand up now if you're ever going to stand up at all.
Yeah. You know, I tend to focus a lot on Broadway because it has meant so much to me over the years. Mm-hmm. I don't see how you sustain Broadway with that in place. And I know that's the least of our concerns at the moment, but
no, but yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've gotten to know Clifton Duncan, the actor who's very active on Twitter. Mm-mm. But if not, oh, I've got to introduce you.
Okay.
It was one of the best episodes I've ever done. He was a Broadway actor who was just on his way. It was one success after another. And then the mandates came and he just said, well, I'm not doing it. And so now he's waiting tables again, this unbelievably talented guy.
Wow.
And I asked him, have you ever been tempted? You know, is there ever been this moment where you've thought, well, I only live once and I'm going to have everything I love taken from me. You guys win. I'll just do it. He says, yeah, in an occasional weak moment, I have thought that. But I've also thought to myself two things. One, it's the principle of the thing. And two, I don't know if I want to work with these people anymore.
Right.
Now that I've seen what they're capable of.
Right. Yeah, it's such a tough call. It's like, I think on Twitter, you know, for all the months that I spent complaining about all the COVID restrictions and everything, I think people were, you know, so many people were like, just move. Like, it's not quite so easy to move. I'm selling my house. I'm leaving my family.
It's expensive, you know, to move too.
It's expensive, absolutely. And it's just an emotional thing where if you planned your life to live in one place and you really had a picture of how that was going to go and you imagined what your future was going to be like with your family, it's not quite so easy to just be like, well, let's move. You know, things aren't going the way we planned. It's an adjustment. And so I feel for that actor because I can imagine that he had pictured his life going a certain way. And it's amazing to me actually that he hasn't like just, you know, bent on it. It's really brave. And again, something I don't see very often from other New Yorkers. What really kills me is when places in Europe have these big demonstrations against vaccine mandates. Where are these big demonstrations in America? Where are they?
I've said the same thing.
Yeah.
And yet the funny thing about it is that the United States, of all these countries in the world, seems to me, because of our pockets of resistance, seems to be, and our surprisingly robust federalism, the country most likely to come out on the other side of this having resisted the best.
Right.
And yet nobody's in the streets.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it really upsets me that Europe is out freedoming us. Really,
yes.
I don't understand it. You know, I, from all my experiences in Europe, they seem much more likely to just accept mandates from the top than we are. And yet here we are. And okay, again, I don't expect it to be most New Yorkers, but some, I thought it would be large numbers because we're just such a big, big city. I thought, you know, some percentage is going to stand up and say no, but it's so rare and it's so not happening here on any large scale that it's scary.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Blinkist. This is another entry in the Woods Project to make your life better. Here is a quick way to become a better version of yourself, a more confident and knowledgeable you. Blinkist takes thousands of important works of nonfiction across 27 categories and reduces them down to 15-minute text and audio explainers so you can read them or you can listen to them. So you get all the major ideas delivered extremely efficiently. So if you have a commute that's 30 minutes each way, you can consume the equivalent of 4 books. Sometimes I just want to get the gist of a book, or I want to know, is this book really worth investing the time to read it cover to cover? I mean, you don't want to read Hillary Clinton's book, What Happened, but you might want to get the gist of what she's trying to say. And they have all kinds of books at Blinkist, even libertarian classics like Milton Friedman's Capitalism and Freedom and Murray Rothbard's For a New Liberty. Not to mention really old books like Machiavelli's The Prince and Cicero's Letters from a Stoic. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/woods to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/woods. You write for the New York Post.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to continue to write for the New York Post as a New Yorker in exile? How does that work?
So I do write for the New York Post. I also write for other places, but the Post is my weekly column on Mondays. I write about national issues a lot. I do write about New York issues because that's what I, when I was living here, I would be interested in that week, but I get to pitch my topic every week. And so, yeah, I'm going to stay with the Post as long as they'll have me and kind of see from there. But I don't think it'll be specifically a New Yorker in exile kind of column, although I'm sure I will write about Florida from time to time.
Okay. Now, the incoming mayor has said, if you're thinking that things are going to change under me, you have got another thing coming. Well, I wasn't thinking things were going to change under you, so you didn't need to say that. But my understanding is that he actually favors vaccine mandates for school children. So it's not even just enough to say you won't be able to go to a Broadway play. You can't go to school. Am I understanding that right?
I imagine that's coming. It's already in private schools all over New York City, which is like kind of the funny thing about it is that these private schools can do whatever they want, and this is what they're choosing to do. So I absolutely think vaccine mandates are coming to New York City schools. And, you know, California had announced that early that they were going to do that. And I absolutely think it's going to happen in New York as well. At that point, I wonder if people will say, okay, I can't take my kids to museums or restaurants and I don't want to get them vaccinated. That's going to be the tough choice. I think you're going to see people leave over it or just give in. And it's really sad that they have to do that because, again, if this was a concern for kids, I would be at the front of the line for that vaccination. I don't understand the idea that people think that like parents are ideological about this. I don't care about ideology where my kids are concerned. If I thought that masking them was helpful and this was a virus that really harmed them, I wouldn't have them wear cloth Batman masks. I would have them in really serious medical masks if I thought that that did anything, but I don't. And parents are going to have such a tough decision if they have to vaccinate their kids for schools.
Yeah. And so that's what I mean when I say that maybe it hasn't fully hit yet, because they're not faced at this particular moment with that decision.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. But as you say, it's likely, given the very limited resistance so far, that it'll either be they'll move away or they'll just give in.
Right.
Now, I was talking about Broadway, but I guess I could extend that to the city and tourism in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's true that there will be some places in the U.S. where they're going to try to make life difficult, even for kids aged 5 to 11. But I don't think a majority of places are going to do that.
Right.
And I don't think a majority of countries are going to do that. So where is the tourist money on which New York's vitality relies going to come from? Has anyone thought of that?
No, nobody thought of that. I mean, literally nobody thought of that, because when de Blasio announced this, I mean, I think it was last week, he announced that kids 5 to 11 were now going to have to show vaccination. And it was literally like 1 week later that would take effect, which is today. There were people on Twitter tweeting like, I'm from Britain. I'm coming to the US next week with my kids. The vaccine is not authorized here yet for that age group. Like, what are we supposed to do? And, you know, you had these people being like, just get the kids vaccinated while you're in New York. Like, because when you're on vacation, what you love to do is go get your kids vaccinated for, you know, with a vaccine that's not even approved in your own country yet for your kids' age group. So I have no idea. I think de Blasio did not think any of this through. I think it was a really spontaneous decision, the way he likes to do things. And I don't believe he considered any of this at all. When he announced his original mandates, that it was before the kid, the
five, for 12 and under. Yeah, he hadn't even thought of, well, okay, can the kid go, can't go to the restaurant with his parents?
Yeah, they forgot kids completely.
Yeah. This is incredible.
Yeah. So that's really his style. He's not very thoughtful or considerate. And so here, I'm sure he didn't think this through at all, that most countries around the world, I mean, the great, great majority of countries around the world do not have the vaccination for under 12. So none of those people can come to New York City for a trip. They can't.
Yeah. So, I mean, that devastates a lot of people. So you would think that the people who are going to be devastated by this would say something.
And yeah.
Yet it's incredible. They don't. De Blasio apparently has further political ambitions. There are people saying he might want to run for governor. Even though people seem to support his crazy draconian policies,
yeah,
he still is said to be very unpopular. I don't know how to balance those two things, or if he is unpopular, why he would try to run for governor.
Right. So he's widely seen as incompetent, but he's seen as ideologically correct.
I get it.
People on the left. He takes the right positions. He has the right enemies. He says the right things about the right people. But he is, you know, largely seen as the goofball buffoon. So I live in Park Slope. This is his home area. I mean, I see him walking around like 2 p.m. so many days, just like bah, 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 listening to music, you know, just looking really hazy. And this is not a guy that's like working super hard at his job. So I think New Yorkers in general think that he's not competent, but they like his opinions.
Okay. Okay. I wonder about how the rest of the state would feel. You would think he would be politically successful the most in New York City proper.
Right.
But outside of there, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I would say he's got no shot at all, but our current governor is also so, like today she, you know, gave a speech about COVID in Manhattan while not wearing a mask. And, you know, like, as I keep saying, she's a geriatric woman. If she's not wearing a mask indoors, like, why is my healthy 6-year-old wearing a mask at school?
Yeah.
And the kids in New York City. And, you know, when I talk to people outside of New York or outside of like these insane places, they can't believe this, but my kids still wear masks outside during recess. And they're supposed to socially distance from their friends, which is, you know, nearly impossible. But they are outdoors playing and they still wear a mask. They must wear a mask. So you have this governor who is not following her own policies at all. So while I don't think de Blasio has a chance, I don't think that New Yorkers should think that that's a done deal. If he gets into the progressive lane and he's the only one in it, he could potentially, you know, defeat her in a primary. And then who knows?
You mind if I ask your kids' ages?
11, 8, and 6, just turned 6.
How have you talked to them about the decision to move?
So they don't love it, but they've really adjusted. They see so much crazy stuff happening around them, and they know that we're trying to give them a sane life. So they were eating outdoors, their lunch outdoors, until it got really cold, like in the last few weeks. But, you know, lunch was outside on the ground. And the thing is, okay, they're kids, they don't mind it. I thought it was obviously awful. But then my 11-year-old, she's in sixth grade, they moved them inside the cafeteria. And now they're not allowed to speak to their friends at all. They have to chew in silence and they're not allowed to talk. And she said to me, you know, one day the vice principal came in And she saw that they were talking to each other. And so she yelled at them. But to do so, to make sure that everybody understood her, she took off her mask.
Of course.
So the whole thing is ridiculous. My 11-year-old is like, wait, you just like spit all over us with your yelling.
I mean, we shouldn't laugh, but I mean, what else? Yeah. At this point, what else can you do?
Right.
It's incredible to me that anybody thinking they're quote unquote, I can't say that phrase following the science anymore. It's just such a farce.
Right.
But at least we know, we have to know that in 50 to 100 years, when all the passions have subsided and most of us are dead and gone, that people looking at this with fresh eyes will look at pictures of this stuff and laugh or say, these people were deranged. These right. people were deluded. There's no way that over the course of history, this will turn out to be one of the finest moments in mankind's history. I cannot believe that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I hope that it doesn't take 50 years. I think that in a year, we're going to face a lot of things that we did in the last 2 years. I really do think that, so, David Leonhardt at the New York Times.
Yeah, so he's been groping towards sanity over the past couple of months.
Right. I forgot what the phrase is, but it's like he delivers the news to New York Times that the rest of us like knew like a year ago.
right.
He like Sherpas them into like, the information that we've had for months and months. So I could see him in a year writing an article about, you know, masking small children and what a horrible detrimental effect it was clearly having. Like, how could it not be? You know, so my youngest just turned 6, and look, little kids, it's impossible to understand them at the best of times. How many times a day do I say what to him? Like, because he's little, he's just like mumbling, or through a mask, it's impossible. And I don't care what anybody says. These kids do not understand their teacher. The teacher does not understand the kids. And some kids, like my kid, who is shy, won't repeat himself. So you're not going to have the kid who like will be coaxed out by his teacher. Some kids are just going to shut down and that's it. So we're absolutely going to have repercussions from that. It's going to be a really clear situation, I think. In areas that masked kids, we're going to see delays. In areas that didn't mask kids, we're not going to see delays. And it's going to be impossible to ignore.
Well, but you know what? Those words, it's going to be impossible to ignore. I've uttered those a lot of times. And doggone it, it's quite possible, unfortunately, for these people. Or they make some other excuse for it. I mean, now we joke today that they'll blame whatever the problem is on climate change or something.
Right.
But they, you know, they'll sit around and say, oh, gosh, geez, the suicide rate's gone way up. I wonder what could have caused that. Well, I guess it just has no explanation.
Right. Well, the suicide rate is actually a great example because they had to face it because the numbers were the numbers. And it wasn't like, look, we don't know what caused it starting in March 2020. It could have been anything, you know? And so, speaking of Leonhardt, but he, you know, he's the one who's writing the like, maybe we shouldn't have closed schools. It looks like that might have been a really bad decision. But again, it's a year plus later. And so it's more acceptable for people to say, oh, okay, maybe we shouldn't have done that in the past.
Right, as opposed to what we're doing right now. That's why it's very easy to say, I think the Iraq war was a mistake 10 years later. But at the time that it's going on, see, that we need you to voice your opinion at the time. That, you know, it doesn't. I don't care that your focus group 10 years later tells you that you should say it was a mistake.
Right.
And not to mention, there is, of course, the example screaming at us. Sweden has 1.8 million school children. Mm-hmm. They kept the schools open. Not one of those 1.8 million children died.
Yeah.
And the school teachers themselves did better than most other professions.
Right.
So and that answers it.
So the response that I get when I mention Sweden is, well, they're, you know, a sparsely populated country and they have a completely different, you know,
culture.
Right. But so what I always say is like, okay, forget Sweden then. What about London? Is London close enough to New York City? Like, do we find these two cities to be comparable? How come London didn't mask kids under 12? Like, do they just not like their kids as much as we do? And, you know, and all the other places too. In Ireland, they didn't. Places in France didn't. Holland didn't. None of the Scandinavian countries masked kids under 12. And yet we're doing it to two-year-olds. Two-year-olds have to be masked. And it's crazy. And it just, I guess that's really another thing that's surprising to me is that all of these elite left people, I know you have friends in Europe, guys. Like, I know you do. I know you've heard from them. So how do you not use that information and say, wait, why don't we be more like these European countries that I want to agree with on everything else?
It's so funny, the claim about population density. And by the way, population density, it's not even clear from the data that it has the effect that people say it does. But right. But we'll grant them that just for the sake of argument. Mm-hmm. When Iowa, now Iowa is not very dense either, probably yeah. less dense even than Sweden. Mm-hmm. When Iowa fully reopened, at least on the state removed restrictions in February, it was referred to in the Atlantic as the state that doesn't care if you live or die. Now, they did not say, oh, don't worry about it. Iowa is very sparsely populated. Right. We don't really need a lot of these restrictions. No. They only have all these little caveats and nuances when it's something they want to protect. But when it's a red state, oh, they can't wait to. And then, of course, if you look at Iowa's numbers over the ensuing months, it just went down, down, down. And there was just not a word from any of them. They're on to the next crazy thing.
Yeah, you know, exactly like when the South was having its spikes over the summer, it was because they were doing everything wrong. But now that the Northeast is having its, you know, very easily predicted winter spike, it's not because we're doing anything wrong. It just, you know, it's just the way things are.
Yeah, it's just the way things are. So the common joke on Twitter now, every time the numbers of hospitalizations or deaths or whatever goes up somewhere, people joke and say, why would Ron DeSantis do this to these states? Because, of course, right. that and Southern college football fans are the only reason that, that anything right. bad ever happens. If people want to follow you, what's mm-hmm. the best way for them to do that?
On Twitter, I'm just at Carol, at K-A-R-O-L. And then I have a Facebook page where I link all my articles.
Are you really just at Carol? I never noticed that.
I am, yeah.
That's a, are you, well, first of all, that is not the usual spelling of the name, but still, have you been on Twitter a long time? You're able to grab that one?
I know. It was actually because the person who had it wasn't using it. And this was back when you could like email Twitter and they would respond. So.
Oh, and you got it. That is yeah. awesome. You have a 5-letter Twitter handle.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that is easy. So now there's no excuse. You just, everybody right. go to twitter.com/KAROL and follow her. Well, thank you for this conversation. It was bracing and cathartic and therapeutic for me. So I appreciate it very much. Thank you. And best of luck to you in you. My adopted state.
Thank you so much. Hopefully, you know, someday we can go to Broadway shows again.
That would be great. In the meantime, we'll find there's some pretty decent culture down here in Florida and we'll all enjoy that.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, a little scheduling thing. I'm sorry I'm all over the place on this, but my team is finding it a little bit challenging, they're telling me, to try and get a regular week's worth of episodes done the week of Christmas. So, and I hear that, okay? I'm not a slave driver here heading up the Tom Woods Show. I'm a very reasonable guy. So we're going to take that. I told you I was going to take the last week of the month off, as I normally do, at least that. But instead, we're going to just spread the episodes out. So we'll have a couple episodes next week. We'll have a few episodes the last week of the year. That's how we'll do it. By spreading it out, I can let my folks have a nice Christmas. And of course, that's a wonderful goal. So I didn't realize that. So that's how we're going to do it. Tomorrow, Mark Crispin Miller from New York University joins us again to talk about what's been going on with his case. Of course, he got in trouble in the classroom for a ridiculous reason. We'll talk about that. But remember, he teaches a course on propaganda. So man, is he an important and valuable voice during these difficult times. So you do not want to miss the episode with Mark Crispin Miller. I'm not going to be posting that episode on YouTube. Forget it. No way. That would be my second strike, and I'm just not doing it. So for that episode, you're just going to have to get a podcast app or go to my Odyssey channel at tomwoods.com/vid, tomwoods.com/VID. All my episodes, including the ones I refuse to upload to YouTube, can be found there. If you're listening to this episode on YouTube right now, you're not going to see an episode tomorrow on YouTube. So you got to remember to go to tomwoods.com and look for that episode on the episodes page. For the episodes page, you can just go to tomspodcast.com and you'll see all the episodes. Listen into that one. It's excellent. It is an excellent, excellent episode. And if you're one of my YouTube listeners, you're not going to hear it. So you got to go to my website. You got to get a podcasting app on your phone or whatever. Go to Apple Podcasts, whatever you need to do to listen to that, because it's going to be sad if you don't hear it. So that's my important instruction for you for tomorrow, and I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.